The Littoral Combat Ship is a new way of designing and operating surface ships. It uses a mission module which is removable from the ship. The ship has a sufficient self-defense capability without the module, but its real primary mission, warfighting mission capability is performed by these removable modules. There's three of them right now, one for mine warfare, one for anti-submarine warfare, and one for surface warfare. It's a very significant departure from past practice on how we design and operate our ships. And that's really the key difference for LCS. This contract awards 20 ships. There are already four that have, there's two that have been built and two that are under construction. So there's already four ships of this kind, either in service or under construction. This contract, as I said, awards another 20 for a total of 24. The Navy plans on buying a class of 55 of these ships.
Now, the word littoral describes the fact that these ships operate close to shore.
That's correct. They are also designed, or they're specifically designed to operate at very high speed in the littorals, which is a challenging environment for the Navy. And they have shallower draft than most Navy ships. And their high speed allows them to move and reposition, avoid threats as necessary in the littorals.
And so that raises a lot of questions about the mission that the Navy has in mind. It sounds like there's an expansion or something different from traditionally how the Navy has operated.
Well, the Navy has traditionally been a blue water Navy, what we call blue water Navy, which is deep ocean operations. With the end of the Cold War, there's a realization in the Navy leadership that our future operations would be more closer to shore, more in the littoral area, which is an area which we frankly had been neglecting unless there was a specific reason to do it. You may recall the riverine craft in Vietnam. You may recall PT boats and those sort of things from World War II. So when we felt the need to go in the littorals, we built or designed special ships for that or boats for that. But after the Cold War, the Navy realized that this is going to be a continuing requirement. And littoral combat ship, along with other initiatives in the Navy, are designed to address what we call the green water or the brown water areas, which are closer into shore.
And just give us a sense for those people that know ships about the length, beam, draft, and manpower that these ships support.
These ships are about 2,500 to 3,000 tons, which is fairly small by U.S. Navy standards. The next ship, next larger ship, would be a destroyer, which is about 9,500 tons. However, these ships are capable of speeds in excess of 40 knots, where a traditional Navy ship generally operates around 30 knots or so. So significantly faster. These ships also have a very small crew. The core crew is 40 sailors right now. And then when the mission package shows up, they will bring approximately 30 sailors, 30 to 40 sailors with them to maintain and operate the helicopters and the mission package itself. By comparison, a destroyer would have a crew of anywhere from, around 300 people, 300 sailors.
Littoral ships themselves are unique, but so is this contract. You know, you've got two companies involved.
Yes, we do. When the LCS was originally conceived, it was an open competition to anyone who wanted to bid on it. Several companies bid. That was down selected to three, and that was eventually down selected to two to actually build the first two ships, which that was completed in the last several years. However, and we continue to have competition between those two shipbuilders. However, we were not getting the pricing that we wanted from the two shipbuilders. So we changed our approach last year and implemented what we call a down select. We said we wanted to buy 10 ships from one builder. So these two companies that had been building LCSs, the four that either in service or under construction, then competed to build 10 ships. And the pricing changed dramatically. They were very aggressive. They were very innovative in their pricing. brought their proposal cost down so low that the Navy realized that this created an opportunity for us. So we changed our strategy and went to Congress and said, the industry has innovated. They've done so superbly, and we have an unexpected opportunity to proceed with a 20-ship award instead of a 10-ship award. I point out that we had planned on buying 19 ships over the next 5 years. We would do the down select, and then we would pick another shipbuilder under the original plan to build the down selected design. That would have cost us extra money to go compete and find another shipbuilder. Under this approach, which Congress approved, we're able to go to the two original shipbuilders, so what we call a hot production line. We don't incur a lot of costs in starting up another production line at a second shipbuilder. And so this way, we can build the ships that we have, we build them in quantity, and the taxpayer ends up saving approximately $2.9 billion in the process. So that's the innovation that we had in this, that the Navy demonstrated in this procurement. And I think it was a demonstration of agility in the government. We had a strategy. We had some created some unexpected opportunities, and we took advantage of those opportunities. Congress agreed with us, and that's why we ended up with the award on the 29th of December.
We're speaking with Rear Admiral David Lewis, the Navy's Program Executive Officer for Ships, and it strikes me that this particular vessel could be something that you could share and maybe get the unit cost down with the Coast Guard. Is there any thought of that?
There's been some discussions early on in the program on that regard. I've not had any discussions with the Coast Guard recently. I'm not aware of other discussions. They're very busy in several ship procurements themselves. They're recapitalizing their surface force. As far as I know, they're content with the path that they're on right now.
And you mentioned that two of the ships are in service, two under construction. Have you had the opportunity to personally engage with any of the ships?
I've been on both ships, they're great ships. I wish I were a junior officer again. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for our younger sailors to get to sea in an exciting new platform and frankly, see the world.
And a couple of technical details, just because I like things that float. Are these diesel-powered, standard power?
Actually, they have a gas turbines. Both of them have gas turbine propulsion for high-speed operations, and both of them use diesels for electric power generation and lower-speed operations.
So kind of naval form of hybrid.
Yes. It allows them – diesels are very efficient at low speeds for ship low speeds for the ship, and so they get very long range out of that. And then for sprint speeds, they bring on their marine gas turbines and get at their high-speed operations.
And the other question is, one of the makers is using aluminum, and that must feel strange for a naval officer to step on an aluminum ship.
Actually, we've used aluminum on our ships for many years. The superstructure on most Navy ships, service combatants anyway, is aluminum on a steel hull. And in fact, one of them, the one built by Lockheed Martin and Marinette Marine, uses exactly that architecture, steel hull and an aluminum superstructure. The other ship built by Austal is an all-aluminum hull. That is unusual for us, for a ship this large. Obviously, we use aluminum for both boats and smaller craft. Austal has a long history through their Australian parent of building aluminum catamarans, which are used in ferry service both in the U.S. and overseas, and they have a good history. So we're very confident that these ships will perform well in service.
Maybe Kevlar is going to be the next hull, huh?
I don't know about that.